This is a Collider.com audio interview.
So I guess I'll get started by saying, what's the last 2 days been like for you talking about...
Sheer torture.
Well, I am curious. Is doing press something that you really enjoy, or is it something that when the movie's really good, it's that much easier to talk about?
Well, no, not always, because, I mean, if the movie is terrible, you can have fun. You could joke about it and have a ball. The movie is already sort of established as a kind of extraordinary piece of work, even though it hasn't opened yet to the public. It's harder because you can't go against it. You can't be interesting. You have to go with the flow. And although one is very happy to be in it, It's sort of hard to talk about. It's hard to talk about success. It's much easier to talk about failure.
I accept. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I definitely want to ask you, you've been in the business for a very long time. It does seem like the last year or two has been extremely good as far as the role. Someone touched on it in the press conference downstairs. Can you sort of talk about these amazing, great roles that you've been doing the last few years and, you know, the critical and, you know, success with them?
Yeah, well, the amazing roles take place in both theater and movies. Everybody forgets that the theater exists.
I have not forgotten, sir.
And most of them, over the past years, I've played the great roles. Prospero, Caesar, and Caesar and Cleopatra, all those wonderful old plays and great roles. They've all been received marvelously, thank God. And now the scripts that I've got for movies are of high quality and all in demand and hot and passionate and emotional and well written. And I'm thrilled. It's all happening since I turned 80, practically.
Well, what specifically this year? You've had two fantastic movie roles, Beginners. Which is universally loved, and everyone, you know, nominations, everyone's talking about it. And also this, you're fantastic in this. Can you sort of talk about this one great year?
Well, yes, I'm terrifically spoiled, that's all. I didn't expect two such extraordinary films, particularly films, to be of the quality that I fortunately got, Beginners and Tattoo. No, it's an embarrassment of riches, that's all I can say.
Talk a little bit about the way you prepare for a role changed over the years, or has it not changed since you first got in the business? What have you maybe learned the shortcuts that you can, say, pass on?
Oh, well, no. I mean, how you prepare for a role is entirely your business, in my point of view. There's little enough mystery anymore left in the world, and in the part of our profession which should be clouded in mystery, because it isn't the public. You don't want the magician to show his tricks, do you, or how he did them. And so I do think that that's a very private thing that we actors should protect ourselves from. It gets easier as you get older, that I can honestly say. Not the challenges necessarily, but the way in which you, because your technique is improved over the years, and you've now, as you say yourself, you know how to be more economical than you used to be when you tried to work perhaps too hard. Now it's cooler, and it's on a much easier level, so you can tackle it. Great roles, knowing that you have a mastery of technique, that you have a terrific voice, you know how to use it, you know how to change it, and to suit the characters that you play, it's a lot easier.
How is it for you preparing for a movie role versus a theater role? Is that any different?
Well, first of all, it's very different because the theater roles are written by the great masters. I mean, that's the greatest literature you can possibly know are the theater roles, Lear, Hamlet, all those great roles. So all you do is you dive in to these unchallenged roles and see how far you can get and what kind of accolades you can get and how good you can be in them. In the movie roles, you can actually improve them by knowing a lot about your own stage technique, which helps a great deal on the cinema, how you can project in inner humor, even though the particular dialogue is not necessarily funny, but you can infuse it with humor. I think both David Fincher and I worked along that line for the old man in Tattoo. I put in some humor that wasn't necessarily in the book, because the Swedes have a great sense of humor, that dark sense of humor that they possess. So I thought that the old man must easily have enough humor to have charmed all those business associates over the years. So we put that in. And so I think that there's more, because film roles aren't written, the writing is not the top thing in cinema. The less said, the better, actually, on the screen. And the more said, the better in the theater. It's the opposite. So one can help, actually one can help the other.
Talk a little bit about working with Mr. Fincher, and what had you heard about his techniques and the way he directs prior to getting on set, and maybe what surprised you about the way he directs?
Well, it didn't surprise me that he was a smashing director, because I'd seen his other movies. And each one was different. He was extremely versatile, obviously, as a director, so I knew that right away, and I thought, that's wonderful, because he uses a different technique for every movie he does. He doesn't have a signature, you know. There's always the director that must have a signature, rather like old Alfred Hitchcock had a signature to all his movies. You knew, oh, that's got to be a Hitchcock movie because of that shot. It's one of his favorite shots. Fincher is of the kind that I really admire, who is anonymous, in the sense that he, as in Social Network, you are not aware that that has been directed at all.
You do feel like you're in the room.
Yeah, and that there are no tricks. The camera actually stays forever on the two kids in the beginning, and they talk away. It hasn't moved. He trusts his technique and his style for each movie, and that was the style he picked for that particular movie, The Social Network, which is totally different from Tattoo. Totally. Here is another one where he masterminds. You are aware that, and at the right time, he seamlessly takes you away from horror and then brings you back into it, giving you a little relaxation away from it in order to hit you harder when you come back. It's an extraordinary piece of work. And how you handle that kind of disgusting horror, which the violence towards women, which we know exists every day, how do you handle it without making it look cheap or like another sort of horror film? And he does that. He handles it with enormous taste. Because he never sensationalizes it. He just lays it out and says, there it is. That's it. Look at it. That's what we're at. And now you can forget about it, because we're going to go on with the story.
Well, talk a little bit about, if you don't mind, Mr. Fincher is known for doing many takes. As an actor, is it something that you appreciate, being able to play it, as you talked about it downstairs a little bit in the press conference, playing it with different colors, different shades? Could you sort of talk about how it was for you, maybe doing 30 takes of something, or 40 takes?
Well, he didn't do that all the time, thank God. No, he does it when he feels it's necessary. And also, there's a time element, too. He knows he's got you for a short period of time, because I was doing something in the theater, you know, and they were very nice and rearranged their schedule so that I could do this movie, which I thought was, I was very flattered about that. So I didn't have all that time. So, of course, when I hit the snows of Sweden, he knew that and said, all right, we better get 30 takes, because this is the last time I'm going to see Plummer for a long time. On the other hand, they all are different, and they all mean something. As I said downstairs in the press conference, that each take is a new thing, a new idea, not like a director who doesn't know what he's doing, who just does one take after another so he can work it out in the editing room later.
One of my favorite films of the last few years is Pixar's Up.
It's a lovely film.
It's fantastic. Obviously, you voiced Charles Muntz.
Yeah.
Could you sort of talk about, if you don't mind, what was that? Do you mind talking a little bit about making that film and voicing that character?
Well, there's nothing much to talk about, because it's an animated movie. I just had fun creating this sort of voice and this creature in the studio. I have no idea how it was going to turn out, the film. Nobody has. And then when I saw it, I thought, well, God, this is extraordinary. It's got everything. It's a animated film with everything in it, a great heart, great imagination, and sort of a whirlwind of favorite things in the world all wrapped up in one picture. I thought it was amazing.
Pixar is known for having people come back in and do the character a few times as they figure it out or adjust the storyboards.
Oh, yes.
Did you do a lot of voice recordings on that one, or was it maybe one or two times?
It depended. It varied. I mean, they came back with it. They actually threw out the whole beginning of Charles Munsch's character and then rewrote it. So we had to do it all over again in a different way. But it worked, and I could see why when I saw the movie, why they'd done this. You have no way of knowing when you're in the studio because there's nobody around. There's no cast. There's just you and the directors.
There's a video game that just came out, Elder Scrolls Skyrim. A lot of people are buzzing about it, and I know you voiced one of the characters. Have you played a lot of video games, or maybe family members have?
No. I don't have a bunch of kids around the house, thank God. And I've never played those games. I think maybe I will now that I'm starting to do them voice off. But no, I think that's something that's totally foreign to me.
I definitely want to ask you, when people meet you on the street, at a Starbucks, at a restaurant, what's like the one or two films they always want to talk to you about, and they just get excited to want to talk to you about?
Well, I mean, normally I don't talk to a lot of people when I go to a restaurant. I try to go straight to my table, and I never go to Starbucks anymore. I don't like their coffee. It's too bitter. I suppose they always want to talk about The Sound of Music because that's the family picture of all time, and it still goes on. That's one of them. There are others. When they bring them up, I'm relieved that it isn't The Sound of Music all the time, because there are certain people in the world that see only one movie, only one kind of movie. I don't understand it. You want to say, excuse me, haven't you seen other films as well? Is it only The Sound of Music that you've ever seen? Why do you talk about that? For instance, personally, I've made way over 100 motion pictures. Take your pick. Have you seen any of them? They're not interested. They only want that one film. And it's sort of amazing, like the same people who drove Clark Gable crazy when he did Gone with the Wind. They all wanted to talk about Gone with the Wind. What about all the rest of the stuff he'd done? You know what I mean.
I 100% do. I think if I saw you on the street, I'd bring up General Chang of Star Trek VI.
I'd much rather talk about that.
Or, for example, Charles Munsch in Up.
Yes.
I'm definitely curious about directors that you admire, or better yet, films. What is your guilty pleasure film? Something that you can watch the guilty pleasure?
Is that what you call it? I feel guilty about anything. You mean that I can watch over and over again?
Yeah, a film like that, and I have a follow-up to that.
Yeah. Well, one of the ones I can watch all over again, I always love it, the Frank Capra movies. I can watch them over and over again. And The Court Jester, strangely enough, which I think is one of the best Danny Kaye movies. I love that. It's so well written by that vaudeville team that wrote it. That's very funny. And the great French movies of the 40s. Le Grand Illusion, which is one of my favorite films of all time. Directed by Jean Renoir.
Yes.
And there are many that I can watch over and over again.
And I have to wrap with you, but who do you have a favorite director that you've had over the years? Or are there too many directors you admire, to put it as a favorite?
No, there are too many directors that I admire. And David Fincher is certainly one of the greats that I've ever worked with. And hopefully I'll work with him again. I regret not having worked with Michael Powell, whom I thought was a wonderful, fresh innovator of film when he existed in the 40s and 50s. He asked me to do The Tempest, actually, with him and play Caliban, and with James Mason as Prospero. And he never got the money raised. And then, of course, he died very soon after. And I'm sorry about that, because he was a great filmmaker.
I agree. 100%. Yeah. I have to wrap with you, sir, but honestly, it is a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for giving me your time.
Please.